Hey Jane, how are you today?
Hey, I am doing pretty well. How about you?
Good. I'm good. I'm excited to talk about this. I know in our last episode, we talked a little bit about getting into robot mode, and
Yes.
we just wanted to, have a conversation around that and talk about starting to chase after our dreams. I feel like getting sober is just like the very beginning part, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be about sobriety, but
For sure.
the bigger picture of it is like when you start really spending time with yourself and figuring out what you really want, you remember what your dreams are, or you start to have new dreams.
Yes. Yeah, so robot mode, it makes me think about just like being on autopilot and just going through the motions and doing the things you always do because that's what you got to do to maintain life, all these activities of daily living. And sometimes it feels almost like sleepwalking through life. And we kind of, it's almost like we're just getting through it until we can get to this little island where we have some relief, like we're going to go do this thing, or we're going to, when we were drinking, we're going to go to a happy hour and have margaritas on a patio and let loose and just forget about whatever it is that we're stressed about. And then that ends, and then we recover from that and we go back to being on autopilot. We go back to sleep. And for me, giving up alcohol felt like I was waking up. I was waking up to the fact that this is an illusion. This thing that we think that alcohol provides, this relief, this fun, this excitement, this sophistication, it's all just an illusion. And when you wake up to that, you can see something that's always been there. You just couldn't see it. And so I think for me, giving up alcohol was a huge part of getting off of autopilot and really like getting back into touch with what makes life worth living? What do I really care about?
Yeah, that's such a good point. What that made me think of is like in the past, I would plan all of these vacations, and then we would get on the vacation, and yes, I would enjoy the vacation. It would be great and beautiful, and I would acknowledge that. But at the same time, my mind would go directly into like, where are we going to go on our next vacation? Instead of like
Yeah.
truly being in the moment and enjoying like what we have right now.
Yes, or even like being like having this feeling of angst or sadness the last few days of the vacation, even because it's almost over and it's going by too fast and you know it's going to end, and then you have to go back to regular life and to this existence of just going through the motions and getting through. Like I remember there were a few years in my life when I worked for a big corporation and I can remember small talk in the elevator. And it was always about the day of the week and Monday again. Oh, it's Wednesday. We're halfway there. Is it Friday yet? All right. Happy Friday. It's Friday. And it's like, what are we doing? Why are we wishing our life away? We're just living for Friday when we go to this little weekend island and forget all our worries and have some drinks. And then we have the Sunday scaries and anxiety. And then it all starts over on Monday. And then we're on this hamster wheel. Like I feel like there's more to that. We're missing the point when we do that. Like I want to find meaning in every day. And I know that's probably impossible. There's going to be crappy days and crappy moments and things that we dread and don't like, but I think we lose touch with the fact that like right now, like I have everything I need. My family is well, my children are safe. I can hear them screaming in the next room. We have a home, we have food, there's so many wonderful things that people would, there are people in other parts of the world or in this part of the world that would love to trade places with things that a lot of us just take for granted. And instead of focusing on what we have, we focus on the things that we're striving for. But once we get the things that we're striving for at this point in the future, by that time, we're already striving for something else, the next target. You know, it's never ending.
Yeah. To a place where, you know, and I feel like just eliminating alcohol from my life has already helped me to not necessarily feel like, oh no, it's Monday again. Like I actually feel kind of excited about the week sometimes. I'm also equally excited about the weekends, but
yeah,
like I'm doing something that I love and I'm passionate about. And I remember though, for so many years, especially when I was drinking, but not necessarily always when I was drinking, but having this feeling when I woke up in the morning of, is this like, isn't there something else? Like, is this what life is about? Just go to work, come home, cook dinner, put the kids to bed, go to sleep, wake up, and do the exact same thing every single day.
Yeah.
You know?
And so then, you had this little suspicion that there could be more, or maybe there should be more. You had thought there was more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But there's also like, we have so many examples of people that do this 9-8-to-5 hustle every single day, and it's very normalized. Whereas I feel like over the past couple of years, more and more people are exploring entrepreneurship and like digging deep, figuring out like what we truly want, and then taking a chance.
Yes. Like, what do you really want to do with your time? And like kind of redefining, like, what is success and what is wealth? Like, is wealth a number in your bank account that you see on a screen, or is wealth the ability to choose how you spend your time, the ability to have flexibility, the ability to travel? And yes, we do need money, and we need to be able to pay our bills and, you know, do the things that make life happen. But also, if you spend so much of your time working and recovering from working just to keep earning more money, but you never actually get to live, like, is that really wealth? Is that really success?
Yeah. Like we were talking before the show started, and we were talking about, I'm going to have to bleep this part out because I'm having a brain fart. But what were we talking about? Like, I can't remember.
Can't remember. Was it about the retreat or?
No. I don't know. I don't remember. I totally lost it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. That's okay though.
Yeah. So where were we going? Set.
We were talking about what the visualization of wealth actually is.
Oh yes. What wealth actually is. Yes. Yes. That sometimes having the ability to choose what you do with your life is much more meaningful than having what we think of traditionally in terms of wealth, and that having freedom is priceless, you know? And I think another form of wealth is your connection to other people.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Relationships, your connection with your spouse or your kids or your friends, your parents, your coworkers.
Yeah.
Really having the time and the energy to invest in those connections is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think that, you know, going to work at an 8-to-5 job that you don't love is true freedom. And there's just so many things that are attached to that, like this idea of being free on the inside and what that looks like. There's so many different angles that we could look at that from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that a lot of times the fear of uncertainty keeps people stuck. You know, there are certain benefits that come with working a 9-to-5 job with a consistent income and with benefits. You know, there's a lot of predictability, or more predictability than there would be, let's say, you know, if you decide to become an entrepreneur or become self-employed or pursue this dream that you've always had. And a lot of times the people in your life, or, you know, just in general, the people that we've looked to in our lives for guidance or support or advice, often they are not comfortable with uncertainty either. And they want to guide us down the path of, yes, I know you want to do this, but, you know, most people don't actually make a living doing this thing. Yeah. So I think maybe that could be your hobby. And this could really be your full-time job. Yeah. But the problem is, you'll never have enough time to actually put into a hobby in order to make it where your children aren't coming in your room and interrupting you. Got it. Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, we have to ask ourselves, like, God or your higher power, however you want to look at that, has he ever let you down? Like, have you ever gone through a place in your life where you were like without a home or without food or without your basic needs? And if not, continue to trust that he's never going to let you down. And I have to remind myself of that, you know, in hard times or when I'm taking a leap of faith and trusting that, you know, something's going to work out, but I don't necessarily know how. I just have to believe that, like, God's not going to let me down because he's never let me down. And I can trust that it's just not going to happen. And then, you know, also knowing that if I do take a leap of faith and chase after whatever dream or goal it is, that if it doesn't work out, you know, we can always pivot.
Right. And I think that, you know, it's hard. It's hard because sometimes people do feel like God has let them down. You know, they have suffered an unimaginable loss, or not, maybe they've lost everything. And so I think that can create a spiritual crisis for a lot of people. And I think for me, just remembering that, like, I believe that God, or faith in God has not promised that we won't suffer. You know, he hasn't promised that if we follow our higher power, that we will never suffer and we'll have all of our needs met. He just promises that he'll be there with us, you know, to give us, you know, the peace that passes understanding, to give us support to sustain us through that journey. And so I think a lot of it is just trusting, like, hey, I feel called to do this thing. You know, this thing aligns with my values. And if I don't do this thing, it's going to be because I'm afraid. And I don't think that's the way that God speaks to us. And so if I'm doing this thing that aligns with my values, like, I just have to trust that whatever happens, even if it's hard and it's not what I want to happen, I'll be able to get through it. And that maybe it's a stepping stone to something greater. You know, like, we have to be willing to fail and to open ourselves up to whatever our perceived worst case scenario is. If we ever want to grow, like, we have to get out of our comfort zone and be willing to tolerate uncertainty, even if it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if we have, like, that nagging fear about something, as awful as that feels, like, I think that's a really good indicator that something amazing is about to happen. And, like, you really, truly just have to take a leap of faith and believe that things are going to work out exactly the way that they're supposed to, and kind of trust the process.
Yeah. Like, things will unfold in their own time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Another important factor on this, I feel like, is, you know, I've always had, like, random business ideas, especially when I was drinking. I would have the most random business ideas and I would talk about them. And then after, like, 24 hours, like, we would not discuss them anymore. Or I would share an idea with someone, the wrong someone, and they would tell me, like, this was not a good idea. You know?
Yeah.
And so I think we have to be really careful about who we share our dreams with, because not everybody is going to get it. Not that anybody necessarily has, doesn't have our best interest at heart, but everybody is just not going to get it.
Yes. And people have different levels of comfort with uncertainty, you know? Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, I think that we have to develop the quality of self-trust. And like, if I'm going to do something, I don't need to go get reassurance from all my closest people that they think it's a good idea. Like, they may think I'm delusional. You know, I got back from Bali last April and decided I was going to lead a retreat to Bali. I had never done that. I had no social media account. I had no presence online whatsoever. You know, I had therapy practice. It was a local face-to-face thing, but I just had a feeling that I could do it. And I was willing to fail. Mm-hmm. I was willing to try and fail in order to see if it could happen. Mm-hmm. And it was scary. And I had to, like, I almost felt like I was coming out, like sharing about my sobriety and talking about myself, my personal self, on a public platform. I had never done that before. And I'm sure a lot of people, there were some people actually in my life who didn't think it was a good idea and who were worried that I was going to get hurt or that I was going to embarrass myself or that I was going to publicly fail. And really, I just was willing to do that. You know, like, I can handle some failure. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, and I'll try again or I'll pivot, you know, but I feel called to do this thing. I don't know why, but I just do. I can't ignore this feeling. And if I don't do it, it will only be because of fear.
Yeah.
And I don't want to live my life that way. Like, how boring is that?
It was a complete power move for you to do that. And there have been points over the year where it very well could have not come together, but, you know,
absolutely.
Here you are a year later with a sold out retreat, and it would not have happened if you had thrown in the towel at 6 months and said, well, nobody signed up, you know, because sometimes it sometimes things do come together at the very last minute. And so, you know, we just have to trust that things are going to work out how they're supposed to. And it is so hard, you know?
It is hard.
When everything's telling you.
I think ultimately, you just have to be willing to fail. That's the only way around it. Because if there was no guarantee that I wasn't going to, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's like you said, like, you don't know necessarily why you have this vision or this, you just have this knowing that you're supposed to do this. And so you went with it. And then we also have to have this knowing that it's going to work out really, really well, you know, and trust that even when everything else looks like it's going to crumble and it's going to fail. Like with my, for example, with my local retreat, there were months and months where I had like a half booked retreat, and it, you know, it came down to the last 2 months and then it sold out. But I could have very easily said, well, I don't think this is going to work out because I don't want to have a retreat for just three people. But I was willing to have a retreat with just three people if I needed to. And because of that, I gave myself space to sell it out, you know, because I kept believing.
Yes. And maybe it would have been that you needed to have a retreat with three people in order to then, you know, 3 months later, have a sold out retreat. You know, it's all about like building and taking steps along the way. You know, we don't just jump from A to B overnight. We have to do the work in between.
Yeah. A really good thing to do, like when we first get these ideas and goals and, you know, we're putting pen to paper and figuring things out. Not everybody right away is ready to, number one, leave their job and start doing whatever the mission is. And sometimes for some people, it isn't even about leaving their job, but there are, we can always take action, you know, like even if it's like a free certification, or maybe it's not a free certification, but you can always put one foot in the door and take one step in the right direction. And that can open up.
Commit to the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it was, okay, I got home. I mentioned this to my husband. I put a deposit down with our retreat retreat organizers. I hire a business coach to help me create a website and an Instagram profile and go from there. I'm like, okay, I'm invested in this. So I'm just going to see what happens.
Yeah.
But if I hadn't done that and I'd waited about a month or two, I might have been like, yeah, that sounded really exciting, but I'm busy, you know, I'm working, I've got plenty to do, I've got my kids stuff, like maybe another time I'll do that. But right now I need to just focus on living my life and doing what I need to do.
Yeah. I used
to hear.
But
the fact that I committed to it when I was feeling inspired kept me accountable.
Absolutely. The girl that led my yoga teacher training, she talks about, like, we'll offer some local stuff like that is free, but most of the stuff we charge for. And she always says, like, people need to have skin in the game. And I never really understood that, but it's just, you just preached it basically. I mean, when you got home, yeah. You told your husband, you made the deposit, you signed up for business coaching, you had all kinds of skin in the game. And so it's like, anytime you would even consider not doing it, you're like, but I already paid like all this money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It makes
I've already invested this money. I might as well just keep trying and see what happens.
And really, it's the same thing with going on an alcohol-free yoga retreat. I think those types of things keep women sober. Like, you know, if say you quit drinking 3 months ago and you have a retreat booked in October, I feel like that highly increases your chance of staying sober because you're like, I don't want to show up to this retreat having drank the past couple of months.
Absolutely. And if that happens, you can obviously do that and start over. But I think you're absolutely right. Like I quit drinking in September of 2022. I think by January is when I signed up for Bali, and it was still 4 months out. And I was kind of coming up on that 6 month point, maybe 4 months ish. And I'm like, God, I really want to do this. Like, well, maybe I don't know. What was I thinking when I quit? Maybe that's really not the route I need to take. But I remember telling myself, like, no, you've got this retreat coming up in April. Just keep doing what you're doing. Go to the retreat. By the time you get done with the retreat, you'll have 6 months under your belt, and then reevaluate. You know, like, you're not locked into anything. I can change my life tomorrow, but I'm just going to stay on this path for a little bit longer. And then I went to Bali, and it was like a whole other world opened up, and I felt so inspired and met all of these women, and you just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like it's also really powerful to just, you know, get plugged in with other women, even if you're not going on a retreat, just get plugged in with other women, find someone to help, find a way to serve, because this concept, it has been playing in my head the past couple of days, is just like, I feel really strongly that if you are not part of the solution, then you are 1,000,000% part of the problem. So, I mean, obviously addiction is like alive and well, like nobody can deny that addiction is a real thing. And so whether or not me or you or any other person has a problem or an addiction, like, I believe it's true that if we're not part of the solution, then we are part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think a huge piece of it is advocacy and starting a dialogue that is countercultural and just start planting seeds. You know, like I was not addicted to alcohol. I didn't have alcohol use disorder. But I think that alcohol is a problematic substance that creates all sorts of consequences in people's lives. Like, if you look at the cost to society of alcohol use, like, you know, car accidents and incarcerations and crime and assault and heart disease and cancer and diabetes and liver failure and, you know, all sorts of stuff. Like, it's just, you don't have to have an addiction to be impacted by substance use. It's just, it's ingrained in our culture to where that when somebody drinks every Friday and Saturday, we consider it normal to be ingesting a substance on a regular basis that causes central nervous system depression. It is a central nervous system depression, closes down your prefrontal cortex, you know, exposes your body to carcinogens, but it's very normalized to the point where you have to provide people with an explanation for why you don't do that. It's considered unusual and odd.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. I'm getting a little lectury right now, but I just like hyped up and
yeah.
I feel so strongly about it. And I know that I was part of the problem for many, many years. And so I don't ever want to come across as preachy or judgy. That's not my goal. I just think we have to consider alternative ways of living. And I'm not saying the whole world needs to quit drinking and alcohol needs to become illegal. I don't know what the solution is. But I think part of the solution is just to start getting curious and start talking about, you know, how do we talk to our kids about this? How do we pick and choose when we drink? How do we normalize mocktails and not having a drink?
Yeah. I don't necessarily think the solution is to make alcohol illegal or anything either, but I do definitely think that the part of the solution is just to have a conversation about it and for more and more people to acknowledge that, like, this is real and it's affecting a lot of people. And,
yes.
You know, to take away the narrative of, like, if you do have this problem, then something is wrong with you, because I think that that is what keeps people sick. For sure.
My pod's just disconnected. I'm going to reconnect real quick.
Okay.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious, after you, I know that your career has always been important to you, but would you say that your, like, drive for, not necessarily success, but just chasing after your goals, was increased after you quit drinking? And if so, like, how long did that take to change?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think that my drive to focus on my career really shifted after I knew that I was done having children.
Hold on.
Can you hear me okay?
Jane Ballard's recording will continue on a new track. Started a new recording for Jane Ballard due to a change in their devices.
I think that it'll be fine. Don't hit stop. I think just...
Okay. We'll just edit it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. So my drive for my career. So I think that my drive for my career actually is part of what shifted me out of wanting to drink. My drive for my career started shifting after I had my third child and I knew I was finished having children. You know, I had two children and I was like, I really want a third. My husband wasn't sure. We finally settled on having a third. And then I just knew that our family was complete. And then when she was about a year old, I worked part-time up until the time she was about a year old. And then I went back full-time. And then several months later, the pandemic hit. She was about 18 months old when the pandemic hit. And another change that happened at that time was that my husband had always worked in an office and he started working from home and he's never gone back to work. He still works remotely. And that gave me so much more freedom to be in the office. He started doing a lot more in terms of getting the kids ready in the morning and, you know, transporting them to and from school and activities. And so for the first time, I was able to really focus on being a career person and also obviously being a mother and a spouse. And that's, you know, I love that more than anything. It's so important to me. But I also, just part of my personality type, I'm an Enneagram 5. I'm a thinker. I spend a lot of time in my head. I love to learn. And in order for me to feel like my best and to feel mentally healthy, I need to feel challenged intellectually and I need to feel productive. And I think we all do to some extent. We all have that generative drive to produce and contribute and make a difference to our families or the community or the world. And so starting in 2020, that just really picked up, and I was so pleased with it, with how my career was going, and I was growing as a therapist and learning more and building my practice. And then I think that's when I started realizing that there's really not space for me to be recovering from, you know, a few glasses of wine. You know, I get up and I see clients at 7 a.m. Like, I don't want to do that. And I don't want to feel sluggish on Monday because I drank on Friday and Saturday night. And so for me, giving up alcohol just gave me back so much time and energy and space, and my mind was clear and sharp, and spiritually I felt better, which to me, I work in a faith-based counseling practice, a Christian counseling practice. And one, the work I do is pretty intense. And two, you know, you do, for me, I needed to be in a good place spiritually to do that work and take care of myself and provide support for other people who are going through really challenging or dark times. And so then that kind of contributed to me getting sober. And then I think getting sober just gave me that much more drive. And then I became passionate about the alcohol-free movement and changing the dialogue and advocating for women and incorporating that into my practice. And my sister kind of makes fun of me. She says I'm one of those people that just kind of does things. I get really into something and I just do it to the extreme. And I've always been that way about various things. You know, like in college, I took German and I was 3 hours from a German minor, and I was almost fluent, and I loved speaking German all the time. And I studied in Germany, and I thought about moving there. Like, I just get on these kicks and I get so passionate about things. And so I've gotten really passionate about living alcohol free and just how it can change your life and the freedom and the peace that can come with it and sharing that. So that was a very long-winded answer question, but
I love it.
But I think that it's just like this self-reinforcing thing that, like, feeling inspired to contribute to the world led me to sobriety, and sobriety just gave me that much more passion to try to make a difference and do what I can to make the world a somewhat better place for even one person, to ease suffering for one person, or to give them the tools they need to ease and make meaning out of their own suffering.
Yeah.
And that's why I got a master's in social work 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. You know, you being fired up about, or speaking German, and then, you know, having the, was it somebody that was a couple hours away that you were learning from?
No, I was in college. I had a foreign language requirement, and I'd always taken Spanish growing up. And I was like, well, I'm going to take German. My roommate actually was taking German. And I'm like, this sounds really cool.
Yeah.
I want to be able to talk to her in German. So I started taking German.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. I can relate to, like, I am the type of person, I'm either like very far in or I'm completely out. Like, I'm either completely in or out. And for me, with this sober journey, like, I had to be 1,000,000% in, and I had to drink, you know, eat the sauce or whatever, and like truly believe that.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Like, I consider it a like healthy brainwashing, like to really start buying into this like idea that everybody actually doesn't drink, and everybody has, and those people actually have really great lives. And like,
they still have a lot of fun, and they're not like boring and uptight.
Yeah. Like, I was very deceived, and I thought like I literally would not ever have fun again. And luckily I was able to prove myself wrong.
But I think that's part of the illusion that alcohol does for anyone who uses it. It's an illusion, and part of waking up is realizing that the people who are missing out are not the people not drinking. It's the people who are waking up with hangovers and regret and shame and guilt and, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how about for you? What have you noticed about your career and your drive and motivation since getting sober?
I am so much more driven. And I don't want to say that I wasn't driven before, but I think at the end of the day, when I was in my drinking phase, I would see things that I would consider bringing into my life or that I would want to do. And then I would just have this negative voice that would say like, oh, that's not going to happen for you, or that just won't work out for you, or that's a stupid idea. And so, you know, this is really what I want to leave people with is the, like, why not you? And that has been a theme that I've been bringing into my life for the past couple of years, is asking myself, why not me? Like, what is different about me that I could not have everything that I want in life? And and so I would say that, you know, my drive as far as my career goes has changed completely, because I was just basically going, I was collecting a paycheck, and there was no, I'm not saying that I didn't love what I do for a long time, but by the end of, before I became a recovery coach, like, I was kind of over what I was doing. I was ready to do something else. I was trying to find something that I was passionate about. And so I just had to start asking myself, why not me? And it makes perfect sense. Like, there, I truly believe that, you know, everything we are our thoughts. And so if I believe I can do it, then I can do it. And if I believe I can't do it, then I won't be able to do it. So
absolutely.
Yeah. It just, for me, it all comes down to that mindset of just choosing to believe the best and believe in myself. And definitely getting sober did that for me.
Like, it's not like people who you look at who are super successful in doing the thing you dream of doing. It's not like they have this secret skill. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it's that they are willing to fail. Mm-hmm. They aren't relying on motivation. They're relying on discipline and commitment. They have a high tolerance for uncertainty, and they're willing to do whatever it takes. They're willing to work harder than the average person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. One of the things I like to think about is, you know, when I've gone through hard periods of life and I just feel bad about myself or lack confidence in my ability, you know, I think through, like, what would someone else do with my body? You know, if someone else was given my body and my brain and my whatever skills and, like, naturally, like, innate resources that I was given genetically, what would some other person do with that? Like, am I really using it in the best way it could be used? Am I lacking creativity, or am I just telling myself I can't? Am I wasting the resources I was gifted? Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to let fear of failure cause me to just waste this gift. Like, I was given a body and a brain that function decently well, and I want to have fun and, like, take risk and see what all I can do with it. And it's almost like an experiment of, let's see what can happen.
Yeah. Let's see how amazing we can make this.
Let's see how well I can fail. How do I cope with, like, embarrassment or, you know, people talking about me? Like, I can cope with that. Will it be painful? And do I want that to happen? No. And yes, it will be painful, but I can do that. It's just an experience, and everything passes. It's not going to last forever.
Yeah.
You know, it will come and it will go, and success will come and go. And, you know, I just want to experience everything that this life has to offer.
Yeah. For me, one reason why this topic was so important is because, like, sobriety and creating a life that you no longer need to escape from go hand in hand. And I just think it's so important to find your purpose. And my message is that, like, there's nothing special. We're all special, of course, but, like, we all have a purpose. And, you know, we don't have these ideas and dreams for no reason. So whatever it is, whoever wants to take a chance on themselves, you know, just take one step in the right direction.
Yeah. Just see what'll happen. And you know, if you get stuck on the worst case scenario, make sure you ask yourself how you're going to cope with that worst case scenario. And then think through, well, what's the best case scenario? And then what's the most likely? I mean, the most likely is that it's going to be fine. It's going to work out. Maybe it won't be easy and there'll be bumps in the road and it won't look exactly like you want it, but it'll work out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that.
Thank you, Amanda, for bringing up this topic. This, you know, gets me excited, gets me passionate. So, yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah. Hold on. I'm going to stop it really quick.